Hey everybody, and welcome into episode 9 of Comics for All. On this episode, we talk about some great books out there to get you in the mood for Halloween, some spooky series, if you will. We also talk about KrampusCon with Turbo Comics and why you should be checking that out and finding it anywhere you can. We also chat a little bit about some very big losses in the comic book industry. We had Jim Novak, Carlos Esquera, and Norm Breyfogle. So please remember to check all of those guys out, all of their amazing work, and why that's truly such a loss for those gentlemen in the comic book industry. We also have some underrated books that we really do enjoy and want everybody to check out. So there's some great recommendations throughout the show, as well as some great work from amazing artists. So remember to like, subscribe, comment, share wherever you get this. We do appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. Don't forget to follow Turbo Comics on Twitter, as well as if you'd like to join in any of the show or any of the conversations we have on the show, follow us at All for Comics on Twitter, where we will be there waiting to hear from everybody. We do appreciate all the great feedback. So thank you so much and enjoy the show. Comic books it is. Comic books for life. Comic books for all.
And here we go.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight.
As you started saying that, Matt, the platform's disintegrated.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I'm a little lost right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what's gonna happen when we start episode 9 of Comics for All. How are you guys doing?
Oh, so you know how I had a problem with Nightmare Before Christmas?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And how a lot of people were saying it's a Christmas movie. Guess what's being played for 2 days, the 31st and the 1st, as a special 25th anniversary edition.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. It's not being played December 24th, October 31st.
I think we're all at fault for just assuming what that movie was there for. You know, we should just stop assuming things. You know, I think the world would be a lot better place if we just stop assuming.
It's Tim Burton. It obviously has the word Christmas in the title. Do you really think he's going to go with the obvious?
Yeah, you know what? It's Tim Burton anyways, so all of his movies are gothic horror, and, you know, that's always good for October, so it's cool. No worries. NBD.
Oh, my goodness. It's more in the strange and weird category, but I just realized I have one point that I would give a shit about. Tim Burton's Dumbo.
Oh, go ahead.
Is if Danny Elfman is performing Pink Elephants on Parade. That could be amazing.
That would be honestly, I saw the trailer for this the other day and I was like, oh man, I forgot Burton was doing Dumbo, right? And I've never been a huge Dumbo fan, but then I saw who was in it, right? And it's like Colin Farrell, Danny DeVito, and I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna watch that movie just because those two guys are in it. So
I didn't know it had Colin Farrell and Danny DeVito. I'm actually a little more sold.
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie. When I first started watching the trailer, I was like, oh, this is going to be a rough one. And then, yeah, Danny DeVito, Colin Farrell, I was like, hey, you know what? I'm in. I'm gonna check this out. If anything, I'm going to laugh at Danny DeVito because all I'm going to remember is him in Always Sunny in Philadelphia yelling about rum ham. No! Oh, rum ham! Yes.
It's just missing Nicolas Cage. That's the only thing that's missing.
Hey, you know what? We just saw a trailer. Don't get your hopes down quite yet. You never know when he'll make an appearance.
He could play the crow.
Well, I have to say, my favorite version of Pink Elephants on Parade is the one that was done by V is for Villains.
Ooh. V is for Villains. Mm. Well, I was going to make a really bad joke to bring up some awful things, but I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to throw Pete under the bus like that. So.
You know the supervillain rock group out of
Chicago.
No, it's
okay. You don't have to throw him under the bus. He's going to miss his jump on that platformer.
I didn't say that.
I wasn't kidding.
He's going to miss that jump right now.
I wasn't kidding. The platform's actually vanished as soon as Matt started saying, watch out.
I'm a little mad at you.
That's
please tell me it's not the actual Toland platformer. It's you doing the Invisible Ledge one.
No, it's just the treasure chest.
Oh, man, this is making for great comic book content.
I know, right? You know, Bungie does have some Destiny comics, and they're okay.
Oh, there. See, that's the turn-in we needed, Marley. Short. That's what we needed. We needed someone to turn it around. Yes.
I still love that they tapped Mark Waid and Ryan North for their very first two outings. I want to see who they tap next.
Yeah.
Pete, what were you saying?
Ryan North did the Adventure Time comics, right?
And Dinosaur Comics, and Unbelievable Squirrel Girl.
Those were fun, but my biggest complaint about the Adventure Time comics was that there's always tiny little print at the bottom of the pages, and I would always forget to go and read them. So I'd have to go and read the comic book, like, twice. But then halfway through the comic book, I'd get wrapped up in the story again, and I would forget to read the bottom notes on the bottom of the page. So I had to go back all over again. It was like,
you need to reread the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl again, then.
First world problems, having to reread comic books.
But you were saying,
I only do 2 or 3 reads when I'm diving into dissecting text. I have to do that enough with children's textbooks. I don't need to do that with my children's comic books.
Gotcha.
Fair enough. You were saying, though, Mr. Director Man?
No, I was. You had something else about, like, Tim Burton or something. I think we totally cut you off. And if he didn't, good. We'll move on. So.
Oh, no. That was it. Just, I still really don't care about the movie, except that, ooh, that musical number could be amazing. I might be really interested in renting that for Redbox.
Yeah, Elfman will do a great job with it, and I'll let you know. Quest for 100, shameless plug on another podcast. I'll probably end up watching it. I'll let you know how it goes.
Booyah.
So we have been off for a little bit. Nice to have you guys all back. We also have Max in here as well with us. If you didn't recognize that other wonderful sensual voice on the other mic there.
How you guys doing tonight?
Nice, man. And let's dive in a couple things, man. Unfortunately, you know, we're gonna kind of start off here on a little bit of a low piece, but we're gonna bring it back up because we're gonna talk about the amazing lives of a few people who we have lost in the comic book industry. And if you would, I'm gonna kind of step away from this one a little bit because I'm not as familiar with some of these guys' amazing work as we're going through pre-show, and Pete and Max are just, you know, they're immediately gushing over these gentlemen. So I want to know more about some of these guys, man. So Carlos Esquera and Norm Breyfogle both passed away, and then also Mr. Novak. I completely this is a big one, and I'm totally messing up right now. Jim Novak. I probably should write some of these things down directing a show. You'd think I would be prepared for some of this. But talk to us a little bit. So Jim Novak, he is a letterer for comic books, as well as big, huge franchises like Star Wars. Tell us a little bit about some of his work, some of the things, you know, that we'd be very familiar with some of his pieces, if you would, Pete.
Oh, man, he was actually one of the very first names I noticed in comics as a kid, because he was just that ubiquitous. He's been across the board. Marvel, DC, Boom Studios, and even did all the comic book lettering for the feature film Creepshow, where you actually got to see the comics. Those were his designs. And as for designs, not only was the guy on the letters in the original Marvel Comics Star Wars, but he was the one who redesigned the Star Wars logo for those, because it was felt that the lettering didn't quite fit the Marvel style. So if you look at it, you don't see that Star Wars logo really anywhere else.
Yeah. It's only on the comics. Yeah. It's very different and that's really cool. I love that. And, you know, may he rest in peace, man. But it's a big loss, especially when you have someone creating iconic images like that. And it doesn't have to be Captain America's suit. It doesn't have to be Spider-Man's emblems, right? Like, these were the letterings and the pieces, though, that brought us into some of these amazing books and comics. And it was all from the words on the page. And that's pretty amazing that someone had amazing work like that. They could bring you in off of that. Max, anything else about his work that you want to make sure was known? Anything like that?
No, I think, you know, Pete said it great. I mean, it's always a sad thing, you know, when we lose one of these legends of the industry. And, you know, and he was one of these guys who, you know, in his, I guess, you know, bucket, he was, you know, not recognized. You know, you don't hear a lot of letterers being recognized, or you don't hear a lot of colorists being recognized or inkers. So I think it's important that, you know, we take a moment and we recognize him, especially as he's gone from us now. And, you know, it might make us, you know, turn our heads a little bit more towards these other letterers and colorists and inkers who do such a fantastic job, you know, with all these books that we read.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It, you know, there's always the big name on a comic book, right? You know, there's always the big guys, right? Stan Lee's and Robert Kirkman's and, you know, all of, you know, Jim Lee's. It's just big names that can go across these things. But what people don't understand is how many other names are on that just next page of the comic book, right? As soon as you turn over that cover, the other names attached to that book, and the letterers, the inkers, the pencilers, you know, there's so many of those names that just kind of go unnoticed, but are huge parts of what make so many comic books fantastic and amazing. And yeah, Jim, for sure, just hearing that list of work is that it, that is impressive to be doing it for that long, for that many years as a letterer, man. That's a wild.
He even did the original Elektra Assassin comic books.
Wow, very cool.
But yeah, man, you are not joking about what everybody really contributes. I mean, ever since we got into this little show here, I have learned so much more about the industry than I have ever known, thanks to amazing people like Stephanie Cook. Shout out to Stephanie Cook at Hello Cookie, one of the finer Canadians and people in the comic book business, about the writing and the editing and how teams communicate. But Nate Piekos of Blambot Studios and a couple of other really awesome folks like Taylor Esposito, and oh my goodness, I need internet cheat for a moment, because no, I can't worries. Remember the lovely lady behind Nancy Drew.
Get it.
But the lettering, but you find out that letterers they're even the ones who design and place all the speech bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that makes perfect sense when I say it out loud, but I never realized that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. While Pete's looking some of that stuff up, Max, talk to us a little bit about Norm Breyfogle while he takes a chance. I would like to give Norm some spotlight as well, man.
No, Norm, I feel really terrible about Norm. You know, obviously everyone does, passing away, but I kind of feel even worse, because, you know, growing up, I always looked at Norm Breyfogle as a great artist, but I never really truly appreciated him, I guess, until I was an adult. And I think the reason for that is kind of what you were talking about earlier, where, you know, I think it's really easy to get sucked into like these huge mega names, you know, like it's really easy to be all about Frank Miller when you're talking about Batman, and all about these like iconic artists who are absolutely amazing. But here you have a guy, you know, in Breyfogle, who's just, his version of, you know, the Dark Knight and Gotham City in the 90s was just absolutely iconic, and it really emphasized, I guess, how Batman would look like throughout, you know, the most of the 90s, really, quite frankly. And I mean, you guys can look up his art, you know, on Google Images, things like that, but you know, it's such a huge loss to the comic book community, because he was such a fantastic artist. You know, he was one of the first guys to draw, you know, Tim Drake, you know, as the new Robin. He was great. You know, his work on Suicide Squad was fantastic. You know, he did some covers too that were just amazing. I mean, again, I feel guilty. I still feel guilty, because it wasn't until, you know, I was a little bit older in my adulthood where I could really see, you know, I guess the value of some of his work and just how talented he really was. So huge loss to the industry.
Yeah, and I just threw in his name here, Norm Breyfogle, into, you know, a quick little image search, and this is just, it's amazing. It's amazing also his work through the years, right? I mean, he has art here from everything from early Detective Comics pieces, Suicide Squad, Batman Beyond. I mean, it's amazing. And some of his Joker artwork, his Robin stuff. I mean, this is just absolutely mind-blowing. So yeah, that is huge, and especially when you're talking about someone who's working with stuff around the Dark Knight. I mean, that is, you know, that shaped Batman not only in comic books, but also in movie and TV show media for years and years and years. So
it really did. It really did. And again, he was one of those artists, I think, growing up, that you almost just kind of, you take for granted, I guess, you know, because he's not one of these guys who's leaving DC for Image, because he's, you know, one of these guys who's just, you know, putting his head down and going to work at DC and doing just amazing books like The Birth of a Demon and just Shadow of the Bat, like stuff, like just so many cool things that he did. You know, as a reader back then, I feel like I took him for granted, and I feel crappy about that, because, man, those of you who don't know that much about Norm, you know, go back and check out his art, because it's amazing, and it's a huge loss, and he died way too early. I think he was only 58, so.
Yeah, looking at, I mean, there's just these Breyfogle covers. I went and found a little article on some of his stuff there, and it is amazing. I mean, Return of the Joker, the Death of Robin stuff later on, these Detective Comic books. I mean, this stuff is just absolutely fantastic. It's gorgeous. It's bright. It's vivid. And you go and look at some of these covers, and I mean, these are covers I've all seen before, but I had no idea his name was attached to them. So,
right. One I got to throw in.
Definitely me being a casual. I apologize. I'm a casual reader, and this is amazing work by him. So, absolutely.
No, it's all good. But one I have to throw in because he's such a huge name in the industry. But one of his works that went largely under people's radars because it was a 90s premiere. And we know how many of those went.
That was a little rough time Malibu, in the industry.
For Malibu Comics, they went under and were bought out by Marvel, and then kind of dissolved after there, despite Marvel trying to say, all right, let's do it. He helped create the comic book Prime, along with Gerard Jones and Lynn Strzuski. Oh, and Bob Jacob. Excuse me. Sorry, Mr. Jacob. But the stories were not only really interesting because it was a comic that centered around kind of a Shazam, or kind of a Shazam / Captain Marvel dynamic, but where it was a child changing into a superhero. It was because he was being kidnapped and experimented on and then put back into his home, kind of gray alien style, only it wasn't aliens doing it. And on top of that, while it was a very Shazam type of transformation, he still had only 13-year-old wisdom and 13-year-old know-how. And the transformation was actually like, I like to think that that the writers and Norm's designs were pretty gross and awkward, like every time. So I think it was actually supposed to be, if it wasn't supposed to be evocative of puberty itself, I think it was actually really, really well done.
Yeah, this is...
And more than half of it, I think, was the look that Breyfogle gave it. And he really did make it look like, here is real life. Here's all this dynamism, but it's completely just normal stuff, except for this one guy who is a superhero.
Yeah.
Who's also 13. Yeah.
I mean, just from some of his bibliography work, I mean, huge, huge names all over this thing with Aquaman and Batman, Catwoman, Justice League of America. He did some Silver Age remaster stuff, but you said Prime, Hardcase from Malibu. He also worked for Marvel and did Avengers Annual 2000, Black Panther, Hellcat. He did a Moon Knight run. I mean, this is just, it's crazy.
He had a great career.
I mean, holy cow. And only at 58, man. What a loss, not only for Jim Novak, but, man, Norm Breyfogle, man. Holy cow. And we also lost a third, I hear, as well, Mr. Carlos Esquerra. What do we got on this guy, man? Tell us a little bit more about this one, Max.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really, you know, it's an awful loss, sad loss. You know, those of you that don't know, he was a legendary Spanish artist who, you know, co-created Judge Dredd. You know, I would have to say that you could make a very convincing argument that he was among, you know, some of the greatest artists of the last, you know, 20 years. You know, he was a great innovative talent. You know, he worked on 2000 AD. I don't know how many of you guys know that book, but it's a fantastic book. The second issue, I think, of that book was the first appearance of our, you know, our favorite lawman, Judge Dredd.
Judge.
You know, Mr. Dredd. And you know, the thing about, you know, Carlos is that he provided all of that. Like, if you've ever read those comics, they sort of have this weird sort of futuristic, sort of post-apocalyptic, sort of just this weird vibe. And also all of the look for all of the characters, the costumes, just the look for Dredd. Dread, you know, Carlos was responsible for all of that. So, I mean, he was in a lot of ways, like, really ahead of his time, just in what he was doing, what he was creating, just absolutely fantastic, you know, and, you know, you've seen a huge outpouring from the comic community after he passed away, you know, from, you know, a lot of other guys like Mark Millar and Dave Gibbons, you know, you've just seen this huge outpouring of, you know, of sadness, because this is a guy who, and really not exaggerating at all, when you look at his contribution to the genre and you look at what he was able to do, I mean, he really needs to be put in that bucket, put in that category right alongside Ditko and Frank Miller and Kirby and Eisner. I mean, that's the kind of, you know, contribution that he made. And I know most Judge Dredd fans are going to, you know, probably love me after this, you know, after I'm saying all of this stuff. But, man, I mean, I would have loved to have seen him work on, you know, maybe some other type of books like in DC or Marvel, or just maybe, you know, some other things like, you know, that he was kind of doing on the side that I've read about. But if you haven't ever read any of his books, definitely get your hands on some 2000 AD omnibuses, some Judge Dredd collections, because it's fantastic work.
Well, and the other thing with that, though, and when you're talking about someone like Judge Dredd, right, like Judge Dredd is one of those few characters that most people don't even know came from comic books, right? They all think of the Stallone movie from the 90s, you know, and that's fine. That's great, right? But one of the things with Judge Dredd, though, is that that is a character that spans so much further past comic books and comic book fandom. And that is something where, you know, we're talking about Carlos here, who basically created that look and that helped mold that character into what he is and what he always represented and what he was. Just looking at through some of his work, I mean, yeah, working with people like Grant Morrison, Mark Millar, John Wagner, I mean, it's just crazy. Garth Ennis, I mean, there's just these, some of these names, yeah. It's just like, you've got to be kidding me. This guy has worked with some of the best, and he did it for decades.
Right. Absolutely. He was the, decades. I mean, it's hard to argue that, I mean, it would be hard to argue against the fact that he really was the, basically the premier artist for British comics.
It's amazing, you know,
for a generation, really. And it is amazing. And it's a huge loss.
I mean, you're also talking about, he did work on Preacher and Hitman. I mean, yeah. Just absolutely amazing work, and what, once again, you know, that's three, you know, I hate to say,
I,
you know, that
was him on Hitman.
Yeah,
I love that comic.
A little tropey, but
so weird.
They always talk about it comes in threes, man, and to hear that these, they're the three names that the comic book industry has lost, I mean, this is huge, man. What an absolute huge nasty blow to the industry. And hopefully it's one of those things, man, where we see some great work inspired by these gentlemen continue to grow and continue to be there. And, you know, they rest in peace, well, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, hopefully, right. You know, hopefully they're all somewhere having beers in Mega City One.
Awesome.
Yeah. That would be, you know, that's fantastic to think about, 100%. Yeah.
It's also funny to think, to remember that, oh, you know, death comes in threes. I'd completely forgotten about that, but that is something commonly said. But because for even longer, people have said the rule of comedy is the rule of threes. Never repeat your joke more than three times.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So to paraphrase, I think to lightly paraphrase Mel Brooks, yeah, dying is easy. Comics are hard.
Comics are hard. Oh my
so
God.
God bless each and every one of you who have passed on and who are still doing it. You are awesome. You are awesome.
Absolutely, man. And yeah, amazing, amazing work for all these folks. So moving past that, though, and once again, you know, to celebrate those amazing, amazing artists more than to mourn, definitely a huge loss. Holy cow, someone's dog is like right up in here. All right. Woo.
Wow, there's a crypto... was somewhere
whatever it was, yeah, someone, I mean, I, you know, people talk about reincarnation all the time, maybe we had some of the guys out here as a dog running around saying stop talking bad about me. Anyways, a huge thing. So what we also wanted to talk about, so we also wanted to get into, you know, one of the greatest months ever here in October. We wanted to do just a little kind of a horror spotlight for everybody. Talk about a couple of horror comics you can dive into this month to kind of get you in that wonderful mood of trick-or-treating and All Hallows' Eve, if you will. So I wanted to kind of take this one around the horn, talk a little bit about a couple of, you know, if you got one or two, great, no worries. If you got more, even better. But just a couple of horror comic books you guys want to share a little love on and give some shout-outs to. Marley, what about you? We'll start off with you.
Well, it's not horror, strictly speaking, but Justice League Dark.
As long as it's a little bloody, that's all that matters, right?
Well, it's Justice League Dark. I mean,
even better, even better. Yeah, my favorite.
It's not horror strictly. Gotcha. The one, the Justice League Dark with all the creepy DC heroes.
Hey, it's got Man Bat. He's not creepy. You take that back.
Poor bastard.
And it's got Wonder Woman. Okay, and she's not creepy. She's scary. There's a difference. Okay. Jeez. Yes, so there's that on my list. There's also been The Magic Order, which, again, not strictly horror, but kind of terrifying in its own right. And then for the last one, really, on my list has been Lady Mechanica. La Belle Dame Sans Merci, number 2, finally dropped a couple of weeks ago. So I'm a little bit behind. It was September. But, yeah. Really, really fun and just kind of a little bit steampunk, gothic noir, horror.
I like Lady Mechanica. Yeah, I think it's a great book, man.
It's a good book.
Yeah, it's a great
book. Oh, yeah, it's really fun. I'm enjoying it, and it's definitely a case of you know exactly who's the villain in issue 1. So you pick up issue 2 because you're like, oh, no, how's this going to go? How's this going to go? So.
And it goes.
Otherwise, I mean, if I add on it. Oh, yeah, it goes wonderful. I can add on one more to my list. I keep doing this here. Pearl by Bendis and Gatos.
Okay.
It's essentially tattoo artist for the Yakuza gets turned into an assassin against her will.
Sounds like my exact favorite kind of book.
Well, it's from the creators of Jessica Jones, but it goes like through these almost monochromatic or dichromatic palettes, and then you get into these moments that are just so delightful. It's like you start getting tense for her in the very first issue. You start getting worried for her, like, what's happening? What's going to happen? How does she get out of this? There's no way out. Oh, God. That's not cool. What can we do? And yeah.
Nice.
It's kind of terrifying in some ways.
Okay. Anything else?
Oh, that's about it.
All right. No worries. Pete, what you got for us, man?
Well, I have to go with one that I've been reading, which I'm shocked Miss Marleyba did not bring up. But I will happily go ahead and bring up the Immortal Hulk.
Yes.
You know, specifically created as Hulk as horror comic.
Okay. I love that one. I was a big fan, actually.
Because much as you can go back and look at Action Comics number 1 and notice that there is no overt menace being perpetrated by anybody on that cover, even though Superman is openly threatening them. Much the same way, in his original concept, the Incredible Hulk was never meant to be a hero. He was supposed to be a brand new Marvel monster, because at the time, he had just as many, maybe more. So, you know, somebody feel free to check my math on that, but maybe more literal monster characters, most of them being of the giant variety that step on your city, but not all of them, who had their own titles. And from Al Ewing, Joe Bennett, Roy Jose, Paul Mounce, it's a very, very, very delicious vibe of the unholy love child of the original Twilight Zone, with Rod Serling coming out to tell you what has happened to reality and why that is horribly wrong if any of us want to survive. And the quiet cruelty, borderline sadism of the weaker but smarter Grey Hulk, who was the very first mutation slash different face that the Incredible Hulk ever wore. It's such a treat. And if you're into, and if you like scary movies but can't go for really, really scary, it's also an excellent choice because there's a little bit of super action thrown in. I mean, it's the Incredible Hulk kind of sort of as our narrator. He doesn't strictly narrate, you'll see. But there's... Oh gosh, I just lost the words. But the way they put it together is much more of a slow creepy than just outright horror. It's much more implied. There's a lot more implied, although you get some memorable scenes, I'll put it that way. But mostly it is the threat. It is the question of the unknown and what it's going to do to you and yours. Especially the fact that Hulk is not the one perpetrating those things. The other people are.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun. I like it. No, that's awesome.
So super high recommendation there, but also one I haven't read that I just found out about today in its fullness that I am now very, very eager to fork over my dollars for. Another hidden gem in the schlock of the 1990s was a Man-Thing book from Marvel Comics.
Man-Thing!
Mm-hmm. A lot of people would think that he's a very, very shallow ripoff of the Swamp Thing, considering them being both very green and both very shambly and both very swamp-based.
Mm-hmm.
But Man-Thing is, in fact, rather older.
So much different as well. They are different types of
roles. Yeah, very different.
Oh, yeah. Talk about a fun, fun delineation. Poor Alec Holland becomes rather forced to become an elemental guardian of the Earth, whether he likes it or not. Forever. But the gentleman who is no longer a gentleman and is now the Man-Thing was changed, was also changed against his will, but became a creature that lives in the Florida swamps and mostly minds his own business, unless you are afraid of him. then you burn when he touches you, whether he wants you to or not.
Kind of a bummer.
But the 1990s series, I remember happening and ignoring because I thought, it's Man-Thing. Way less interesting than Swamp Thing, I do believe, was the actual logic. But as I've just learned today, I was so horrifyingly wrong because J.M. DeMatteis, of so many hallmarks of comic book history and DC history in particular, including the creation of Justice League International and beloved to this day for that, had the writing chores, Shane M. Bailey on colors, and Liam R. Sharp of, among many, many other things, the recent Brave and the Bold Batman and Wonder Woman series, that miniseries that pitted them against the She and the and the Red Caps, among others, in Tiernanog, and who's going to be drawing the Green Lantern series.
Yes.
A lot that he and Grant Morrison are helming.
God, I can't wait for that.
Did the artwork.
That's gonna
so
be
I am
sick.
Insanely excited to pick up this Man-Thing book that I realized yet did not realize at all.
Well, I'm cool.
Because I've already seen some and it looks beautiful.
Well,
and tragedy and a scary is even more fun when it's beautiful.
Nice. And that just
very cool.
I'm glad that they're gonna kind of reach back into that pool with Man-Thing. I think it's a pretty interesting character. It's a really cool concept as well, and to hear Morrison's gonna have his name attached to it as well is gonna be ridiculous.
Oh, no, sir. That's my poor English.
Yeah, I can't wait
I do apologize. This was a 1990s series that Sharp and DeMatteis and Bailey did. Morrison and Sharp will be bringing us Green Lantern. So apologies for my grammar there. Although I am definitely just as excited about the Grant Morrison, Liam R. Sharp Green Lantern. Police procedural in space. Yes, please.
Done and done. I like it. Anything else, Pete?
Well, we've actually been asked to not only review not one, but two lovely, lovely things by some lovely, lovely creators as well, which is the other main thing I would love to chat about. So
yeah, we're going to get that
until
just
everybody's
a little bit
gone through in line.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Sweetheart in a little bit. Always feel free to drop a little line like that, though, Pete. Don't be afraid to say the name of it. We'll get into it, man.
I like teasers. Spoilers, sometimes. Teasers, those are fun.
Got to give us that name. All right, sweet. Max, what do you got for a little bit of Halloween, little creepiness, Octoberness, just fall?
Yeah, you definitely said it. Definitely said it with the creepy part. So, I'm not gonna go all the way back to EC Comics because that just seems a little bit too obvious. But I am gonna go back in time a little bit. We're not gonna go current comics. We're gonna kind of pay tribute to some of the purveyors of the horror genre, if you will. And we all love EC Comics. We love Tales of the Crypt. But and they're probably the most famous horror publisher, I would say, of all time. But I would say that those of you that love horror, and I basically just devour everything horror related, it's Warren Publishing. That's the name you want to remember. Warren Publishing. These guys raised it to the next level, man. I mean, these guys, back in the day, these were the guys that were publishing Creepy and Eerie Magazine. These were the comics that you didn't want your parents to find, man. You wanted to hide these under your bed, put them in a shoebox, read them at night, but these were the black and white magazines that really allowed a ton of just amazing, fantastic artists to thrive. Guys like Neil Adams and Ditko and Bernie Wrightson and Frazetta. I mean, these are all names that worked on creepy books, on eerie books. And, these were just absolutely amazing if you were a horror fan. I mean, just issue after issue, they just push the boundaries a little bit, and they were great, and they spawned a gajillion copycats. You can go out and buy Creepy and Airy omnibuses right now from Dark Horse Comics, and they're fantastic, and they really kind of paved the way for some of the other publishers like Marvel and DC to kind of go back into the horror genre in the 70s and start releasing more horror comics, like The Tomb of Dracula with Marvel and even DC started republishing Black Magic in the 70s. So if you're looking for some creepy, awesome stuff, go look for Creepy in Eerie. Omnibus is published by Dark Horse Comics.
Nice. Definitely will be doing that. No doubt about it. Anything else? Any other shout out?
That's probably the biggest one for me. I mean, I could go all day long about horror comics.
Oh, I know you could. we're just kind of giving a couple, two, three tops. You gave a whole company's worth. I like that as well.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I think if I had to name one other one, just to go and get your hands on, if you want something really fun to read, I'd tell you to go out and buy Afterlife with Archie. Afterlife with Archie is just an absolute treat. It all begins when Jughead's pooch, hot dog is killed, and then it just goes on from there. So, anybody who's a fan of zombies and Archie and just something really fun, but it's also a really kind of compelling zombie horror tale that really is written well. Go out and take a look at this, because Afterlife with Archie is great.
Nice deal. Well,
actually, there's a specific question I'd like to put to the room, because it's not Archie horror like all the cool kids are going for these days, but I've had my eye kind of halfway on Scooby Apocalypse for a little bit now. Has anybody read that?
No.
Sounds fun though.
Oh yeah, because it's the name does not falsely advertise. I do know that much.
Nice. All right. I dig it. Well, cool. Anybody else? I guess it's my turn. October theme go, so the big one I really wanted to talk about was American Vampire. It's one of my favorite vampire themed comic books. It's from Vertigo. But Scott Snyder, Rafael Albuquerque, just doesn't get much better than those gentlemen. Art, story, style, American Vampire was something for me when I first kind of got back into comic books. I got my hands on this and I just went, why does no one tell cool vampire stories like this? It doesn't exist. And this was one of them. So if you're hearing this and you're yelling at me about other cool vampire stories I need to check out, please send that over to our Twitter at All For Comics and I'll definitely check them out as well. But as far as I'm concerned, American Vampire is just, it's kind of that pinnacle of a great vampire story and a nice cool twist on the genre as well with where it takes place, how it's run, and just amazing work by two very wonderful creators as well. Three with Stephen King in there as well. So really nice. But one I had for a little bit more of a lighthearted get into the horror life is a comic from Titan Comics. It's a book called Norman, and it is basically a small child, you know, very young kid in early school who has a little demon with him that speaks to him and convinces him to murder his other fellow children and teachers, and kind of his adorable goofy life of living as a murderer amongst a bunch of children who gossip and talk trash on each other. It is a very creepy, it's a very dark humored book, but it is a lot of fun. Stan Silas is the artist and writer for the book, and then he basically did the whole thing for those two pieces of it, the main parts there. So I definitely would recommend checking out Norman wherever you can find it. Even if you have to go get it digitally, go support it. They have a couple of trade copies of it as well where you can get some good issues. I don't think it's not running anymore, so it's not anything ongoing. But, man, I remember picking that up and having so much fun and it just being a really cool twist. You know, I was reading a lot of really heavy, heavy comics at the time, and that one was a nice little perfect twist on something lighthearted yet very dark and creepy at the same time, as there was this, you know, like 7-year-old child killing his teachers and classmates to keep his secret hidden. So it's pretty fantastic. Great stuff. So check that out. So as Pete had kind of talked a little bit about, so those are some books just to kind of get you in the mood, get you a little bit of the horror vibe, a little horror corner, if you will, as we're trying to name that section of the show something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Next episode, it'll be something different. We'll figure it out. one book that we really want to talk about, because we were actually given some pre-releases of this, and now it's actually out digitally and will be out on store shelves, if not already, very shortly, is a book that we got our hands on called Sweetheart. And what a fantastic, fantastic story. I'm going to see if it went to the same place as you, it went for you guys as it did for me. I haven't been able to talk to the creator as much as I'd like to. Hopefully we'll be able to get him to sit down with us, chat a little bit about the book as well one day soon, maybe eventually, fingers crossed. We're working on that one. Maybe we'll see. But amazing art, fantastic tale, just something that was really great, very visceral, and I really liked the twist on it. So let's start over with Pete. Tell us a little bit about the creator, the book itself, kind of where it came from, and then I'll kind of get everybody's thoughts on the book and what you guys thought of it.
Well, the tale is one written by Dylan Gilbertson of such other intense titles as Bear Arm Baby. He might not necessarily recommend that to you, but I absolutely would. Because you get exactly what advertised.
Even better.
What is advertised to you?
It's kind of like T-Rex Cap. You know what's coming.
Yeah, you can hear it coming. Especially with his lasers. And it is written by him, art by Francesco Yaquinta. I apologize, sir. I'm probably mispronouncing
that. Not the greatest linguists on the show, but shout out to you.
Colors by Marco Pignotta and letters by Sara Telefonte. And it is a gorgeous looking tale. very, very moody, with very painted, with very, very painted backgrounds, and very, and almost splotches of ink to accentuate things like leaves or door, or doorways or evening. And that works extremely well because it's a tale of these creatures that stalk, that stalk people their entire lives, or until they die, whichever comes first. And you can take your, and there is a tonic that you can take to keep them away. And the larger and stronger ones are very small and can even lose your scent if you take the tonic regularly enough and for long enough. And even watch what you eat, because certain things make you smell better to them.
More tasty.
Smell sweeter. But they never leave. But they can stay with you for a lifetime. So, the smaller ones in particular do.
So what's really cool about this is the fact that you have these monsters that modern medicine has found a way to hold them at bay, if you will. Very creepy stuff indeed.
But they don't have to sleep. And they want to eat you. But they can wait. They can wait. And that's the really cool part, is that it's actually all based on diabetes. That's why there's two types of, that's even specifically why there's two types of monster.
Oh, and some that are with you all your life, and some that
can be avoided.
Yeah, quote. For sure. Absolutely. No, I loved it. Oh, I loved the twist on that. I love the embodiment of that, you know, of that ailment.
I loved how easily that translates into a monster story. I mean, I don't suffer from diabetes, so I can see where some of you might be saying, well, yeah, easy for you to love it, but it's a really well-told tale, to the point that if you also like scary things at all, I absolutely say, friends, take a look. It's already, he's still got it coming to store shelves, as Matt mentioned, but Gilbertson has already gotten it set up through Comic Central, comixcentral.com. Not to be confused with the other big old digital comics publisher, but a big one for getting indie comics out there in particular, actually. So take a peek at them in general. And this is a gorgeous tale, and very, very simply, very eloquently told. And yeah, whether it's something that's familiar ground for you or not, it's just haunting because it just takes the familiar and twists it a little bit.
Now that you've made that connection about the diabetes for me, I'm not diabetic myself, but it runs on both sides of the family. So I've always been thinking of it like, oh, geez, I got to make sure I'm doing everything I can to prevent it from happening for me. And now that makes so much sense, how everybody in that comic is worried about these and trying to avoid them and has these ideas of, oh, it's not me, it can't happen to me.
Well, also how it's hereditary almost, right? Where, spoilers,
oh, somebody else in your family has been,
you know, they're even worried about, you know, what eventually comes to becomes the daughter, who they're scared of these monsters for her as well. And you
oh,
know,
by the way, spoiler corner.
Yeah. Like I said, spoiler. Spoiler. Yeah. Spoilers for sure. Yeah. But it's one of those things, right? Like, I love where they kind of took the twist of turning a ailment, an illness, you know, a disease, if you would, into a monster story, and made that an easy
they twist.
They
personified it,
yeah,
too. It's just,
they embodied
it,
right?
It is so wonderfully well done. I even asked my fiance, please don't call me sweetheart for a few days.
I do have to, I do have one last thing to say before I shut up completely and let everybody else go through, but I said last episode that, oh, best, you know, best public service announcement comic has to go to, oh my goodness, and I forgot last time and I forgot this time, what is the name of the federal organization for
CDC?
No, weather disasters.
Oh, FEMA.
Yeah, you know, the hurricane preparedness comic from FEMA that was drawn as being preparing for a zombie epidemic, but they all, but all it is actually giving you really good hurricane and or typhoon preparedness. But no, this is, I don't think the team really intended it that way, although the connections to diabetes, I'm almost quoting directly from Dylan Gilbertson, so credit where credit's due there too. But wow. Yeah, intentionally or unintentionally, this is an amazing public service comic. This is, it's the most thoughtful and creative one ever, quite frankly. And it's just a dang good and not just on that field, it's a dang good comic in and of itself.
But oh, and the way that he
I'm going to veer straight into just singing praises. So like I said, I'll shut up and let discussion continue without me.
Yeah. Oh, just and just the way that the character gets complacent about it, even though he's been warned, even though he's seen it all his life, and then ends up getting him at the end, and it's
Yeah.
And how did you say the penciler's name again?
Pete, unmute yourself.
I can't remember if it was Iquinta or.
I'm also taking a hard look and really possibly using proper pronunciation. Maybe, kind of.
We're going to get close.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say, you know.
Francesco Iquinta.
There you go. There you go. You know, just taking a look at some of his art on his DeviantArt page, but looking at his art on Jan Sweetheart, man, this is. I mean, we could go panel for panel and just kind of marvel at how well he was able to convey, I guess, you know, the story that Dylan had written. And it's just fantastic. I really hope to see more of this guy. I know I'm really excited to see that, you know, there's more Sweetheart books kind of in the pipeline, but, you know, seeing more of this artist, that'd be really fantastic because like you guys said, I mean, he encapsulated this weird sort of, I guess ominous sort of just dread for me when reading this book. You know, you really did feel like, you know, with the writing and with the art, but his art really, you know, like the boy is walking through the forest and you can see the shapes, you know, I mean, it really imparts that sense of, you know, just dread, like someone's always watching you and someone's always behind you. Someone's always, you know, there with you. And they just did a fantastic job. What a great team. Right? This is a great book.
Yeah, the coloration's fantastic. Also, you know, they're, you know, we're once again getting some spoilers with it, but one of my favorite kind of moments in this book is towards kind of the middle of it where the mom in the book, right? She's kind of cursing the monster, right? And she's tearing herself apart because she feels like she, you know, the kid is sorry because he's like, I let this monster get too close to me. I it's all my fault that this monster is now following me. I shouldn't have gotten so close. I shouldn't have gotten that near it, right? Because the whole idea, the premise of the book is if you get close to them, they'll attach onto you, they'll latch onto you. And if they like you a lot, they'll stay with you forever. And I loved the play of the child taking blame and then the mom realizing how much it was her fault that, you know, she should have done a better job protecting. And there is just that dread, your heart sank on some of these moments. And the panels on this thing, watching that mom fight herself for her kid's safety was just absolutely one of those pieces where it pulled you in. It absolutely pulled you in. It took you right where it wanted you to be. And it was a great story on that. And I think you could, you know, diabetes was definitely probably the main inspiration for some of these monsters, but I think you can apply it to so many other types of ailments that you want to, because it is something where some of them are more self-inflicted monsters, where some of them are monsters that are quick and fast and they're there for you as well. And however you want to interpret it, you know, how whatever was the main intention of this, that was the piece that I really took from it, is some of these are so much and they are so self-inflicted. Some of these monsters you can have latched on to you and attached to you your whole life. So I am going to tie this. I do it almost every episode and I'm going to do it again, but mental health awareness, man, reach out. You're not alone out there. Talk to people, let them know, you know, what you're feeling. 'Cause everybody's feeling a lot of the same stuff you are. We guarantee it. hit up NAMI.org, NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Illness, and help yourself out as well. Seek some other people out there. And it's not so much about you getting better, you being cured, but just realizing that you're not alone. And I think that's really big. And this is a book that really took that to heart. And I, not to pun that, but yeah, it's a sweetheart, right? Yeah. It really does. So, huge fan of what we got to see. I can't wait for more issues from this, especially because it did what all number one issues should do so well, and that is give you a damn good hook, line, and sinker. And holy shit, does this one do it so well.
Again, that's comiccentral.com for number one.
Yeah.
Great digital home for indie publishers. And yes, Mr. Gilbertson did confirm that it is going to be a six-parter.
Nice.
So especially if you like the story and the team. Well, there you go.
Good. Good for them. That's awesome. Any other thoughts, words on Sweetheart before we continue on?
I just think it's amazing how, you know, in the comic, there he is. He's going through his life, and he creates the support network of people around him. Maybe not necessarily intentionally, but he has his mother, and then later on he has his wife. And he, you know, these people don't go away. And when his mother gets targeted, he starts trying to support her the way she supported him. Mm-hmm. You know, all these choices, these decisions, the hard lines, the no, you have to's. And those are really important.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really sucks you in, and I can't wait for reading it. All in all, I need this. I need to marathon read it.
Yeah, this will be a tough one waiting weekly or monthly for her. That's for damn sure. So, nice.
Well, I'll keep you guys and our listeners/readers posted as up and as it gets released elsewhere too.
100%.
Because I'm freaking sold. And I'm even one who tends to hate the horror of, but the monster is still out there. Woo. Or everything's fine, and then everybody dies at the end. But while it's similar, the end is not that. And even though it's similar, I'm sold. I'm very interested.
Oh yeah.
Especially since there's going to be a closure to it.
Cannot
I want to know what that is.
Especially if he's already got in mind how he's going to end this and what he's going to do for it. That's exciting to me. That's really exciting to me, and I can't wait to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And see it. All right, cool. Well, awesome stuff. So with that being said, let's dive into comic book movies, man. We had a couple of – we had one really big release. Marvel is doing their best to spin really good things about this movie, and I think they should. But Venom came out. Has anybody else seen this flick besides myself?
Sadly, no.
Okay.
But I look forward to it.
No worries. I think you guys should, especially if you're in need of just a really solid action flick. I won't dive too much into it if no one else has seen it, but it is the highest grossing October Marvel film. So I don't know if they've had any other October films, but it's 80 million first weekend, 120 or a little over 200 million worldwide. And, you know, this wasn't a huge blowout, you know, major Marvel. This was a Sony venture into Marvel again, and good for them. I think Ed Hardy did an amazing job as Brock. Tom Hardy.
That would have been interesting.
What the fuck is Ed Hardy? Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy. Great job as Brock and as Eddie Brock. That's probably where I was thinking of Eddie Hardy. You know, that maybe I was mixing that up. I don't know. I'm gonna go with it though. I don't care what anybody says. But I liked what they did with the CGI. I liked how they kind of tied some characters together. I wish they would have stuck to a little bit more of a traditional story with Venom that I personally know it as. I'm not the biggest Venom fan. I don't know as much about the character. I hope you guys get to see this because I want to pick your brains about it a little bit. But one of the things for me that I really took away from this film is First of all, Michelle Williams needs to be in everything. She's just like the best leading lady ever. Like she's dope as dope ever. But secondly is Sony pulled off just a really great action flick with this, and they tied in Venom pretty decently well to it as well. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. There is an absolutely fantastic, amazing end credits scene as well that gets you excited for the universe that they're going to be building and putting together. And I'm glad to see this had some success because there is so much more. This was a very shallow puddle of what the Venom and symbiote universes can be. And I really hope we get into them because this was a great little entry into that, in my opinion.
Yeah, to give you a taste test of what's going on in the comics now, Venom has now been linked to, you remember the City of Nowhere from Guardians of the Galaxy, the one that was built in the skull of a space god?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Venom has been directly linked there.
Okay. Interesting take.
It's gotten interesting.
Did was he linked to that particular place? Like that's the Venom symbiote that we know as Venom, or just the alien symbiote that like the race of alien symbiotes?
To his race, okay. and not to the place in particular, but to what it was a corpse. What Nowhere is a skull of?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's actually pretty interesting. Yeah, I'm probably a little bit behind when it comes to Venom, but I think the last Venom book that I read from Marvel was Venom Space Knight, and I actually really, really liked it. But it was a lot, it was a lot different than what people are used to. You know, it wasn't Eddie Brock, it was Flash Thompson, and just something totally different, taking Venom completely out of his what we know as Venom completely out of his comfort zone, I suppose. But I'm kind of still I haven't seen the movie yet. I had a choice to whether or not to see Venom or whether or not I wanted to go and see the Predator, and I chose the Predator, and I'm not sure if I made the right decision or not.
Yeah, I haven't watched Predator yet. I will be seeing it shortly. But I have not. You are not the only person that has not been super excited about admitting they went and watched Predator. So,
yeah. So I mean, I'm gonna try to go and see you know Venom, here pretty soon, and I'm trying not to get my hopes up too high.
I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend it. I'm sure it's a mess as far as like real, real big fans of Venom and symbiotes will be. I guarantee this will be a mess. I haven't heard a lot of that blowback, though, like kind of digging into it, some people reviewing it, things like that. But it's a solid action flick. It really is. It for anything, you will have fun watching the film, even if you're rolling your eyes, wishing to God they had done different storyline or something with it. So,
cool.
Yeah, even the negative press, that's kind of what I'm hearing, is just like, you know, it wasn't what I wanted. But it was but I enjoyed it. Is even what the negative press is saying.
Yeah, it really. I mean, and that's the thing. This could have maybe have been anything, right? Like this could have been any space alien movie that Sony wanted to make it, but they attached Venom to that instead. And you know, if that's what we have to do to kind of get this series rolling and get some tie-in and deepen that universe for Sony and their Marvel films. I'm not mad about that. I'm really not.
You know, I'm kind of curious about, I think I heard through the grapevine that Tom Hardy said that his favorite, basically 35 to 40 minutes of the film was basically cut out. And I know that there was a lot of the movie that was omitted, so that it could meet a PG-13 rating as well. So I'm actually really curious to see what the director's cut of this film might look like. You know, I was hoping that, you know, they would try to, you know, create a Venom movie that was maybe a good, you know, I mean, maybe towing the line a little bit between PG-13 and R, but leaning more a little bit on the R side. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. It sounds like it was a success, and it sounds like I wouldn't be surprised if Tom Hardy is lined up for two or three of these films. So,
yeah, and honestly, especially after the end credit scene, I think they might have to go R with the next one, honestly, if they're going to do it the right way. And I would love to see that, and to hear that pieces got cut out to get it closer into that 13. You know, that's sacrifices that people are trying to make money make, right? Not people who are trying to make a great film sometimes. So that's a little disheartening to hear that some of his favorite parts were pulled out. But, man, that has me excited now for a director's cut. So,
yes, totally.
That's the bigger piece of that one. Sweet. So with that being said, we also got our first images from the highly touted, but really nothing has really been seen of this film. The music comes from a couple of on-set cuts, but we finally got the poster for Hellboy, new movie coming out. What did you guys, have you guys looked at this? Have you checked this out? If not, I'd Google it and let's, I think it's worth chatting about.
I haven't looked at it, but I want it. I don't want to look at it because I just want to enjoy it.
Not even. Oh, so you don't even want to look at the poster? You don't even want to look at the artwork for? Okay.
No, I'm just gonna go in and hardcore. Enjoy it. Like I don't need it. I don't need any of that stuff. I just need to enjoy it.
Hardcore. You're way more hardcore than me, Marley. What can I say?
Yeah, it's way more hardcore than me.
I hate trailers, but holy cow.
Yeah, like, I know. You're not even looking at the poster. You hate trailers. We're like, oh man, do you see that awesome trailer? All right, you don't watch trailers.
And here's why though, the trailer for Venom,
they give away everything.
They showed parts of the trailer from Venom. They show parts in the last 20 minutes of that film, and I hate when they do that stuff.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, that's kind of bummer.
Yeah, there are some instances where the trailer really does sell you on the movie when it's something you've never seen before or you're completely unfamiliar with. Or it's just something brand new, like they've never really done a movie like this before and it's a new concept. In the case of Hellboy, it's Hellboy. It's going to be fun. I mean, what do I need?
I love your take on that. It's Hellboy. It's going to be fun.
Yeah,
it is though.
You're... And yet, both of you make compelling cases with the nope, media blackout, or nope, at least the trailer blackout. Because thinking very much of the frightening and the bizarre, the one time Arnold Schwarzenegger of all people actually got screwed by the production company was the movie The Sixth Day was genuinely. Very clever, but the audience got almost no chance to appreciate that because the trailer literally told you the ending, which was the very clever part, but it flat out told you the ending.
Yeah,
and I remember that.
That is one of the stupidest and most selfish moves ever.
Super frustrating.
Yep.
But it's so old now, I will say, hey, if you haven't seen it, you should go see it because the story is actually really good and guaranteed you're not going to know where the end's coming from because you never saw the trailer.
Okay, now we have to back out on YouTube though because I don't want to see what it's like.
Yeah, I mean, I think, going back to the Hellboy reboot, I'm a massive, admittedly massive Mignola fan, insane fan for Hellboy, and I'm trying to temper my expectations, but I'm really excited. And
don't temper your expectations. Just lower your standards and enjoy any movie that comes out. That's what I
served.
Do.
Get served.
Oh, no, get seriously. Served. If you go in saying, I'm going to have a fun time, even if this isn't a great film, even if this isn't going to win an Oscar, even if this isn't going to get anybody nominated for anything fancy, but I go in expecting to have fun and I have fun, then what's the problem?
No, it's I can't do that.
I don't have to think about my job for 2 hours.
Hellboy is just Hellboy is so near and dear to my heart that it would be impossible for me not to have a little bit of worry in the back of my mind. However, I will say that I am super stoked because obviously, is for those that don't know, this is a movie that's going to be directed by Neil Marshall. Mm-hmm. who did the Descent, which was an amazing horror film, I'm pretty excited about the casting of the film. Mia Jovovich in her the role of the Blood Queen, I think she's going to be. Yep. And Daniel Day Kim as the BPRD agent, Ben Dymo, I mean Ian McShane as Professor Broom. I mean, that's
awesome.
Real,
man. That's going to be killer.
I mean, it's going to be so much fun. So seeing this poster And any of the promotional stills that we've seen of David Harbour as Hellboy, I mean, I've just been absolutely stoked, and I really just can't wait for the film. I just hope that they don't do the trailer thing. You know, I hope they just give us a little bit of the film in the trailer. And lastly, the thing that I really loved about that last Hellboy poster is that it was legendary as fuck.
Yeah, legendary AF, yeah. Right on there, man. I love it.
What a great tagline.
Yes, 100%. And Ian McShane, man, he is totally his career right now. I'm loving him as old man Ian McShane and everything he's doing right now, because he was in American Gods on Stars as Wednesday, and he by far was the best part of that show in a huge way as Wednesday. So. I actually read the book, and all I could picture was everything in Ian McShane's voice with his face on it. Like, there was nothing that could have been done with that book to not make me see Ian McShane as Wednesday on that. So,
yeah, he'll be awesome. Really interesting as Professor Broom. I think obviously he fits more into, you know, obviously this is going to be a little bit of more of a gritty sort of remake of Hellboy. So I think he'll fit well in that role. And, you know, for those of you that haven't actually went out and read Hellboy the Wild Hunt in Dark Horse Comics, you know, go out and get that, because that's kind of what this movie is you know, drawing from. It's what it's not necessarily based on, but it's really drawing a lot from the Wild Hunt. And I gotta say, the Wild Hunt is maybe, you know, one of the best stories in comics that I've read in the last 25 years.
So. You know, I've absolutely got to pick it up, because
Hellboy Wild Hunt,
my students will check out the comic book movies and then they'll try and talk to me about them. And I'll say, yeah, but that's not how it happened in the comic books. And they get these wide eyes and like, there are books associated with this? Yes.
I just love they know what books are. Or am I just not being hopeful enough for our younger generations?
Not hopeful enough, okay. At least with my students. Okay. They love the school library. They love libraries in general. In fact, they have already created their first comic book with issues number 2 on the way, and then a second competing firm is creating their own comic book with promises of a release soon. So I already have my big 2 in my classroom. And I just can't wait to see what else they come up with. Yeah.
I'm in. Hellboy has always been something that's been really good. You know, always sucks to not have Guillermo del Toro attached to anything, especially for how many years he was trying to convince everybody to just let him do a third movie. But this one, all the right names, I think, are attached to it to be excited for it. The thing is unlike Marley, I just can't be excited for something like that. I have to go in with very super low expectations, so that anything above that, I'm like, "Woo, that was great, man. I'm in. That was an awesome film." Yeah.
That's exactly how I am.
All right, I'm easy to please. My expectations don't even exist. There, it's not like I go in with high expectations or low expectations. Yeah. I just say, I'm going to go have a good time.
See,
and if I don't, then I say that was a terrible movie.
Yeah. I think we're doing it right.
Yeah, if I find myself checking my watch in the middle of the movie, I'm like, you know what? That tells me that I'm not really enjoying this movie.
Yeah, I wanted to check my phone in the middle of The Predator, and I had pretty lofty expectations for that, because it's you know, it's a Shane Black movie, and so if I would have just went into The Predator with like bargain basement low expectations, I probably would have went out thinking,
So everybody at Comic-Con, so I didn't even know there was a Predator film on its way until I got to Comic-Con this year, and people walked out of the panels like, oh yeah, the new Predator, man, looks okay. And I was like, and here's the thing. So I was like, all right, well, what happened at the panel? They're like, well, you know, we got this really cool phone charger for free as a handout. And I was like, so what happened at the panel? Oh yeah, we got this really cool phone. Like, that's all they could tell me about the panel was they got a portable phone charger. And I was like, I'm not excited for this film. Wow. I was like, I'm not excited for this now. Oh, yeah. So it has been on my back burner, and I've been watching a lot of other stuff before I go and, sit down at the Predator. Also, I'm not a huge Olivia Munn fan, so she dated a Packer, and I can't stand for that.
Ooh.
Okay.
On the other hand, she was an X-Man, so
nope. She was dating a Packer at that time, so that's why that movie was awful. There was a Packer on set of that film. So,
well, here you go. More creepy and suspenseful thoughts then.
Yep, exactly.
The letterer I was looking for earlier was Ariana Mayer.
Ariana Mayer.
Of Nancy Drew.
Good. Nice. Awesome shout out. I like him. Yeah, so go be ready for Hellboy mid-April sometime. That'll be coming out. So exciting, exciting stuff. We are going to leave you with a last little piece here. We wanted to talk about some books that are just some of our favorite runs, some of our favorite series that are just underrated, low-key, went under the radar for a lot of people, maybe didn't have the biggest runs, didn't have the biggest releases. I'm not as tied into the industry as some of our other folks here, maybe even people listening to the show. So I don't know about where my stuff's gonna land on this. My stuff might have been huge and I had no idea. I'm just like so out of it sometimes, especially when I first started reading some of these books. But
you and me both.
The runs, the series that I want to talk about, I have four that I'm going to mention, were all books that kind of when I got started back into comics again, these were all runs that I could not get enough of, and I was absolutely enthralled with them. A couple of them were really limited. They were only 5-6 issues, but holy cow, they were great. And one of them even got discontinued and got brought back just to finish off the story because there was such a big clamoring from the fans on it. So with that being said, I'm gonna save mine to the end because I can do that. I'm the host. Max, let's start off with you, man. I keep saying runs. I think that's a bad term. What runs got? You got some runs for us, Max?
I think
revenge.
Exactly. Exactly. <First issue. laughs>
Oh, that's a hard one to find, man. You know, I want to say, you know, I don't want to give a run. I think I just want to focus on, you know, maybe just a team, you know, that have been in books, you know, for a heck of a long time, you know, since the 60s. And, you know, this is a team that doesn't get a lot of attention. They're a team that I would, you know, most of the time when I find people that actually read these comics, they're really into comics. You know, these are people who have been reading comics for a heck of a long time. Their first appearance was in Adventure Comics 247. What this team is, it's the Legion of Superheroes. The Legion of Superheroes. So I know a lot of you guys have heard about the Legion of Superheroes. You know, I know a lot of you guys, you know, see those books on the shelf or in the bargain bin or things like that. You know, they don't get a lot of love, but you know, over the years there have been some absolutely fantastic stories, absolutely fantastic artists and creators working on these books, and they have a lot of really great characters. I mean, you know, I know that there's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to be like, oh man, Legion of Superheroes. But you know, this is you know, you can go back and buy those 60s books for cheap, even those adventure comics, you know, even the Legion of Superheroes featuring Superboy books. All of those books were fantastic, and even into, you know, I would say the 2000s. I mean, there are books that Mark Waid had written, you know, they're even the New 52 Legionnaires and all of that stuff. Great, great stuff. And, you know, I could go on and on about, you know, the different members, which there's a million, and you know, all the different things that are, you know, pre-Zero Hour and Earth One and all that stuff. But for those of you that want to check it out and don't mind kind of starting at the beginning when comics were a little bit, you know, more innocent, you know, more, I guess, clean, just wholesome. Maybe go out and get an omnibus of those Legion of Superhero books from the 60s and really start to, you know, track what is really one of the more important DC superpower teams, you know, in that universe. So give a look to those guys because everyone forgets about the Legion of Superheroes. So let's give a shout out to them.
Nice. I like it, man. I like it.
Yeah.
You just made one of our Twitter followers extremely happy.
That's awesome. Shout out to you. That's like Marley said. Cool. Pete, what about you, man?
Well, again, you know, not entirely obscure, but I think just does not get the love that it deserves. If you look at Mark Waid and Mike Waringo's run on the Fantastic Four, now, both men absolutely celebrated in all the ways they should be in their own rights. But it's like this one just, I mean, we all know how popular Image was for their content back in the beginning, and one of the third or fourth generation Image books was Mike Ringo's Trellos. Yeah, Trellos. That gets more love than this so celebrated an artist. He has one of the most respected comic book industry awards named after him. And Mark Waid is Mark Waid. You know, he even founded his own studios, for crying out loud, at least twice now. But this was letter perfect Fantastic Four, and if maybe that's why you're one of those folks who are saying, oh, so okay, they had a comic book run together and it was on Fantastic Four, okay, that's fine, because that's your reaction to the Fantastic Four, then try it if you want amazing adventure fiction in just old school, very old school 40s and 50s style, with a healthy helping of Indiana Jones and Star Wars style in there too. It literally includes everything from a hostile takeover, our heroes doing a hostile takeover of a foreign nation, to the afterlife itself, in all very thought-provoking as well as just exciting ways. And it wasn't Mike Ringo the entire time, but even then, it was, even then, it was still very nice, very fitting artwork. And it was one of those rare cases where the main run had no feel of being broken up by the temporary change in artists. It felt like, no, that's the mood of this storyline. And now back to our regularly scheduled program. But seriously, Mark Waid, Fantastic Four, Mike Ringo, one of the most perfect combinations ever for anything. We're talking peanut butter and jelly. We're talking, you know, Starry Nights and Van Gogh. We're talking, it was just gorgeous in every way you can think of. I can't help but try and poke holes in things that I'm enjoying. I have never found one in that run and don't think I ever will.
Wow.
Yeah, don't you dare try to poke holes in it.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Nice. Anything else, Pete? That sounds awesome, man.
It is genuinely beautiful. I mean, nice. you ever get a chance, like Marvel Unlimited, or even just find the trades, dude, you will be happy you spent the dollars that way. I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Now, anything else? It flies under the radar a lot. You know, it's a much, much more recent one because that was from the early 2000s. So yeah, it's going on 20 years if it hasn't broken 20 years old by this point.
Cool.
It might have even been a little bit earlier, but one much more recent than that, like the last 3 years. But one of the folks who helped me get back into comics, yeah, you know, their title, I'm going to betray just how clueless I am as to how to pronounce your name, sir, but Marcus on Nasso and Jason Mers, Voracious from Action Lab Comics. A lot of folks Voracious. Know who Action Lab are now, but Voracious, easiest way to put it is the first comic that got me excited about comics again. The first one that brought me back after a several year absence. The very first one that got me saying, okay, this is a comic I really want to buy and make sure I'm reading was Kill the Minotaur from Image Comics.
Yeah.
But Voracious was the first one that had me almost jumping up and down. And we're talking time travel. We're talking the culinary arts. We are talking
dinosaurs.
We are talking dinosaurs. We are talking big explosions. And the most badass grandma since Faye Valentine. And if you're a gigantic nerd, you know exactly what that reference I just made was. But if you don't, watch Cowboy Bebop.
Not to mention the recipes at the back of the comic book issues.
Oh yeah. Bourdain was not the only one. Bourdain and friends were not the only ones. You actually had really good cooking, actual cooking, at the end of every monthly, as well as a good incentive to By the trades or by the monthlies.
Yeah, and since still you going. Can't get dinosaur meat, they have appropriate replacements.
Good substitutes. For that brontosaurus bone.
Volume 3 is coming sometime this month or next month.
Nice. Very cool. Uh-huh. All right. Marley, you got some underrated books that we need to know about?
Well, since he already stole my Fantastic Four run that is absolutely near and dear to my heart, I'm going to have to go with, I know I've mentioned this one before, Eleanor and the Egret.
All right. Nice.
Talk about, there's something very French about it in just some of the artwork. Kind of harkens back to some of that Tintin era style.
Oh, movie artwork is.
I don't remember off
the Sam Keith.
You can say it.
Sam Keith.
There you go. Sam Keith. But it's absolutely gorgeous. It has almost a watercolor feel to it. And then there's this Art Deco style that's going on. And even in just the first couple of issues, you get the feel that there's so much happening here. There's, you know, the story about her and the artwork. And then there's something else going on with her. And then there's this other woman who's just the creepiest. It's delightful. I love it.
The creepiest.
She is. I mean, talk about dead-eyed spider lady. You're like, what the heck?
Fantastic.
Awesome. I love it. It's just so much fun. You sit back thinking, oh, I'll just read this. This looks like it's pretty. This looks like it'll be fun. Nope. Oh, it is so much bigger than what you thought.
Good. Well, nice. Anything? I know Pete stole your other one, so anything else, though?
Hey, she didn't go for Immortal Hulk. I had no idea where I was coming, what was going on anymore, in my defense.
Very cool. So I know I've mentioned this first one before, but I have two others. All three from Image, though. So if you don't know where my allegiances and loyalties lie, you will after this plug fest for them. So the first one, though, is Danger Club. Great story about kind of a post-apocalyptic Teen Titans style, in quotes, Teen Titans style, group of heroes, man. It's all kind of, they're all kind of sidekicks, you know, that are all to save the world and do the right thing. But it's just, the art is just over the top amazing, as most Image stuff is. But Landry Q. Walker, Eric Jones, were the artist and writer for this book. It's an amazing series. If you love some great blood, some great fighting, some amazing twists in this book as well. I mean, just from issue one. And if you also just like just super kind of badass like women archetype as well, there's some really killer female heroes in this book as well from Danger Club. So I recommend them. Check it out. Very short run. It's only about, I think it's 9 issues on that one. I don't have it right in front of me on that. But once again, I'm horrible at this research shit. Just terrible at it. But yeah, 8 to 9 issues, really easy, really quick as well. The other one, Harvest, AJ Lieberman and Colin Lorimer. Really cool about Harvest was, think of it as a doctor who loses his license for drinking, gets taken into a very, very, very cultish, dark world of harvesting organs, is kind of how the story sets itself up. It is fantastic. I love it. It is creepy. It is brutal. And it has a small child. And you know, as we all know, small children are always creepier than anything else in this world. So great, great run as well with them. A limited 5 issues, I believe, from them as well. But something I really enjoyed reading at the time when it came out was Harvest. That was a lot of fun. And then the last one is Witch Doctor. Witch Doctor was all over the place. It had a lot of things going on with it. It came out hot and wild from Image, and it like disappeared for a couple of years and came back and finished off the run with just a single like kind of big issue, if you will. But this is by Brandon Seifert and Lucas Kettner. They did this book, and what was really cool about Witch Doctor, I like to describe it as if the show House, where it's like this crazy kind of doctor, you know, kind of doing experimental treatments and things on his patients, met Constantine and dealt with the occult and spells and demons and witches. And it is fantastic. It is once again, it's heavily violent. It's really brutal. It's so gruesome, though. It reminds me of kind of like the good, like, 80s kind of squishy horror movies where stuff is squirting out and bursting at you. It's green, it's oozy, it's bloody. It's just fantastic. So Witch Doctor is a really, really great run as well. Once again, all of these were kind of limited. They all kind of, I feel, ended well before their times, except for Harvest. That was planned out. That had its 5 issues and was done. But Danger Club, Witch Doctor, both, I felt, ended well before their time was up. I wish they would have had a longer runs. I wish we would have seen more from both of these stories. But I can't recommend all 3 of those enough, so check them out.
So good. Witch Doctor, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that is such a great book. And it's kind of funny because, you know, Pete just mentioned Kill the Minotaur. Yeah. You know, Lucas Kuttner worked on that book as well. And that guy, see? Like, you're talking about that. Oh man, you're talking about that 80s feel, that 80s horror film, that, you know, maybe the Reanimator, maybe the Thing kind of thing, you know, stuff going on. Oh man, those Witch Doctor books are good.
They're fantastic. They really are. I was such a fan of that book. It was one of the ones I loved seeing get on the racks, because I knew how much fun that read was going to be every single time it came out. And it felt like it never disappointed me. I wish it would have gotten picked up for longer and had a little bit of a longer run and more people got into it. But man, so much fun. Really big fan of Witch Doctor.
See, at the very worst, that sounds exactly like an anime I'd really enjoy.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, if it was in a manga somewhere, black and white, it would have been that for sure. It really would have been. It would have been fantastic with it, too. So, well, great, man. That's what we got for the show, man. We quite a good episode here. It's always great to have you 3 in my lives talking comic books. I really appreciate y'all and missed you. But glad we could get this out for you. I know we're running a little late. Marley over here is fading on us quickly, so we're going to wrap this guy up. With that being said, someone has some new social media I'm sure she wants to talk about. Marley, where can everybody find you?
Oh, gosh. On Twitter, @ Marley Cricket. Sometimes it's just comments about cats. Sometimes it's comments about things I'm noticing in comic books or TV shows, like Batman Beyond. Just started watching that for like the millionth time.
DC Universe, great way to catch up on that.
Yep. Sometimes it's just musings about how I'm really glad my cat can't type. His grammar would be atrocious due to his lack of education.
Well, you know. You're talking about cats and Batman, and that means you've basically got a good half of the internet won over already by your Twitter there. So awesome. Check her out, Marley Cricket. Pete, where can everybody find you, sir?
Still love helping out, doing my part on @ All for Comics on Twitter, Harris_Doubledon on PlayStation Network, and theoretically on Twitch.
Nice.
And malice-corp.com as Pete or Igor.
Yeah, nice. And Max, how about you, man?
Yeah, you can find me and all my comic book compatriots at Turbo Comics on Facebook. You can also find Turbo Comics on Twitter @ Turbo Comics ID, since we're based out here in Idaho. You can find us on Instagram, and that's just @ Turbo Comics. And you can also check out Krampus Con, which is the winter Comic Con that we're putting on here. It's the first winter bazaar, and that's just Krampus Con on Facebook or @ Krampus Con Idaho on Twitter.
Nice. And thank you everybody for tuning in, liking, commenting, subscribing. I'm the Big Papa Matt on Twitter as well as on Instagram. You can also find me at the Big Papa Matt on malice-corp.com, where you can find not only this show, Comics for All, but all of our other family of podcasts. Just go to the site, you'll see podcasts and other media, find any of the shows you want to check out. But also follow us on Twitter @ All for Comics if you want to join in any of these conversations as well. And remember to like, subscribe, share with all your friends, your family, your enemies, anybody you think might enjoy this, and play practical jokes on them if you think they won't. So just remember to always leave those 5-star reviews. We really can't tell you how much we appreciate them, and look for more to come @ Comics for All. Thank you all so much.
Yeah, those practical jokes will backfire. They'll realize that they love us anyway.
Nice.